everything.
David, welcome back to What in the World. How are you?
Well, I'm a little distracted.
By?
All the hair on the back of my neck is standing up. All the hair on my arms is standing up. I am totally freaked out right now.
By what specifically?
You played Ooh, Baby, It's a Wild World
yeah.
by Cat Stevens.
Okay.
15 minutes ago, I was in my kitchen. I was having my steak. I wrapped it up in little leaves of lettuce. I'm dipping it in some mayonnaise, a little mayonnaise and barbecue sauce mix I make. And I'm sitting there going, if Richard is going to ask me what is the state of the world, I'm going to answer by quoting Cat Stevens,
wow.
Ooh, Baby, It's a Wild World. And I know that once I quote that song, that they'll go in post and pop it into the show. And then you call me up, I pick up the phone, and that song starts playing. I swear
wow.
to God, it's like I got hit across the face with a 2x4. It's unbelievable.
Well, that
I
makes two of us
totally
here.
Totally freaked out. It's like crazy.
Well, I'm equally freaked out here, and Aaron can see me here. My face is stunned because, again, we have a sort of a go-to lineup of songs that we play. But to be honest, if I was to say what the normal chronological order of songs that we usually play, usually out of first or second break, we'll go to either Sly and the Family Stone, or I mean, it mixes up, but often I remember Wild World by Cat Stevens being usually in the second half of the show. So whatever synchronicity, no pun intended, brought it all together, again, who better than you to talk about how that ain't a coincidence?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about playing it on guitar and that little scale run that he does. I think it's a C major scale. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, all that stuff. I had it all in my head. And I was actually going to, I was planning on busting out that lyric, you know.
Wow.
And you beat me to it, buddy.
Wow, man. That is... I mean, so I'll ask you this then.
It was very creepy. It was very creepy. I was haunted as soon as you started playing it. I'm like, this can't be frickin' happening.
But this is, you know, and this is obviously not the first or the last time this type of thing will happen to you. But as you've sort of, let's say, evolved personally, is this the type, because it's interesting to me that you're still as blown away by these types of things, and I don't know how you couldn't be. I'm the same way. Something like that happens, I'm just absolutely flabbergasted. But I have to guess that over the course of your life, but especially, let's say, the last 10 years, this type of thing has to be happening more and more to you.
Yeah, I've had some really, really good ones. I guess, you know, to pick up the phone... I mean, this had all the deliberateness of, like, a truck fucking hitting... I'm sorry.
Yeah.
This had all the deliberateness of a truck hitting a wall. I mean, it was like... It was just so undeniable, you know?
So what do you... make when this
in my head.
But when this happens, then what do you... How do you interpret this?
Well, synchronicity is obviously the subject of my most recent book. These kind of things have been happening to me for so long that I finally said, what the heck, I got to write a whole book about this and explain it. And ultimately, we're living in a spiritual illusion. We're not dealing with the sort of hard and fast rules of tangible physical reality that most people think of as axiomatic and unbreakable. Reality is a lot more plastic than we think. And it's ultimately a play of consciousness. We're all interacting with a co-creative reality, and the adversaries on our planet are constantly trying to use that against us. I'm driving around LA now, and there's billboards for a movie called San Andreas.
Yeah.
And all it says is San Andreas. And it's like, oh, you think maybe they're trying to harness people's consciousness to manifest the big earthquake that they're hoping they could have so that things go chaotic and their defeat can be forestalled? You know, that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a co-creative reality in which the adversary on this planet is using it against us, but the positive folks that are out there in the universe, angels or whatever you want to call them, they're sending us these messages. And, you know, I'm just gobsmacked because I don't think I've ever had a synchronicity that powerful right as I'm starting a radio show before. It really impressed me.
Wow. Well, and I'm glad you touched on what you did, because I just had this conversation the other day. You and I talk a lot about movies because I think we both pay attention to not just movies, but popular culture and where things are being seeded, hidden in plain sight, whatever term we want to use. And again, we don't speak in absolutes because we don't know definitively. And there's different ways you can approach this. Either there's an overall collective manipulation for the bad, quote unquote, or there's also the other possibility that, you know, if you go back to, let's say, painters in the Renaissance who were trying to hide Easter eggs of knowledge so that the sort of powers that be wouldn't see those things. I'm not sure what's going on, but I go to movies, you know, pretty regularly, often just to see these things. I just saw Tomorrowland. You mentioned San Andreas. I just saw somebody say that Nostradamus actually has a prediction about the San Andreas thing happening around this time, which is just too freaky to think about. I saw Tomorrowland with George Clooney, which, you know, again, very interesting in terms of the ideas of a simulated reality and all of these things. I went and saw the, you know, Divergent series with Shailene Woodley. And again, I know those movies aren't, I'm not the target audience. I know I'm probably not going to enjoy, you know, the love triangle between teens either, but I'm going specifically to see what's there. And again, what was interesting there to me was the idea of a simulated reality. Now, the cool thing is, we're living in a time where the holographic universe theory is now a quote unquote mainstream theory in whether it be physics or string theory, whatever. And Sylvester Gates, which is, you know, Sylvester Gates is at the pretty much at the top of the pyramid. He's a scientific advisor to Barack Obama. This isn't, again, some sort of fringe guy. And a guy that spent his life, you know, as a mathematician and a physicist in labs. You know, even he recently enough in a symposium, I think it was actually moderated by deGrasse Tyson, where Gates comes out and he says, listen, I've gone as deeply as you can go into this, and I don't even know what he means or how he does it. But essentially, his takeaway with his deep look into the sort of the mathematical equations that make up the universe, whatever. And he's saying this on a stage of scientists with a crowd of scientists. And he says to deGrasse Tyson, my takeaway is what I see there are ones and zeros. And Tyson is like, well, what do you mean? Symbolically, blah, blah. He goes, no, I am telling you that the deeper you go into this sort of rabbit hole at the numbers level, what you find is code. Computer code. And again, everybody's kind of speechless. And again, the default in that world is always, oh, you're talking about God. You're talking about a guy with a beard on a cloud. What are you saying? And he wasn't willing to go there, obviously, but he was saying, look, I'm not saying anything. What I am saying is that the absolute root of what makes up the universe that we're living in is the same thing you would find at the deepest level of a computer game, ones and zeros. Is this sort of abundance of this type of stuff sort of tipping us off here, David, to a realization that this is some big simulated game we're in?
Yeah, I think that the holographic universe principle does apply here, and it is an intrinsic aspect of reality. When you look out into the deepest depths of space, you notice that our astronomers can never find an end to the universe. The farther they go, the more magnification they use, the more they see. That could very well be the result of the universe itself being toroidal like a donut, and that we're actually looking at stuff that's a lot closer than we think, but it's because we're looking at like two rounds of the torus or three rounds of the torus. And then ultimately that torus itself is just a hyperloop that's an emanation from a single point that doesn't even have space or time. And I have been talking about this in my conferences lately with the work of Nima Arkani-Hamed and Yaroslav Trunka, these two Princeton scientists who basically hacked quantum mechanics. And you got a bunch of theories that are blowing around, and most people who are not specialists don't realize how flimsy a lot of these theories are and how much they're reaching to try to come up with an answer without really having a firm empirical basis to make those conclusions. And when you get back to what is actually jiggling down there, what do we actually measure as these little squiggles in the quantum level, these two guys I just mentioned solved the puzzle. And what they solved was to see that every little squiggle we can ever measure in the quantum level is all just jiggles coming off of one geometry. And that means that there actually is no space and there is no time as we know it. It's all an illusion that's caused by what they're calling these amplitudes from this shape that they call the amplituhedron. And again, the amplituhedron is a basic sacred geometry. When you finish out what they didn't quite see, you have a Merkaba or a Star of David in three dimensions. And that is the core of what our universe is about. You see that symbol in the Masonic square and compass. You see it in the Hebrew Star of David. And you also see it in Buddhism with the so-called Vajravarahi mandala. It's a very consistent thing. And also, if you look at the most common mandala, which is the Sri Yantra, where you have a series of triangles all interpenetrating each other inside a circle, that is an illustration of how this original geometry starts to iterate itself into what we think of as the universe.
It's wild. So, I mean, that even, like, when you mentioned the mandala thing, have you seen The Last Mimsy, by the way?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, in fact, the guy who I've been working with on our Hollywood screenplay wrote the original draft of that. They came in and did a big rewrite on it, but that came out of his brain.
Wow.
So, yeah, definitely.
And I want to talk about the other stuff that you're doing in terms of, I want to get the progress report, but again, the convergence and the timing of this, again, no pun intended, seems to be synchronicitous. We're going to be back with David Wilcock after the break. It is What in the World? Sirius XM Canada Talks, channel 167. And we are back with our guest, David Wilcock, and I was just talking to our producer here, Aaron Papernick. David, I was saying, like, what would be the mathematical breakdown odds of you being in your kitchen, having a meal, having that whole thought in your head about, you know, probably ask me about this. You know what? I'm going to drop and you come on, and also you're the author of a book called Synchronous. I mean, you got to be talking one in some sort of crazy seven-digit number, no?
Yeah, it's ludicrous to even try to think of it as a coincidence.
Yeah, it certainly is. And again, the trajectory that you've been on for years, and it's interesting to somebody that's as immersed in all of this as you are, it never does cease to amaze the I don't know, call it the beauty, the intricacies, the creative the creative grace of this. You know, universe that we're living in continues to awe and inspire even somebody like yourself.
Absolutely. This was one that I certainly did not expect. I had actually premeditated that I was going to drop the signature chorus lyric of the song Wild World by Cat Stevens. I'd planned out how I was going to do it, and then I expected that you guys would add it in later on in post-production. And then to have it actually just start playing, it really freaked me out. That is probably the best radio show synchronicity I've ever had.
Wow. Well, that's probably some material for this weekend. Let's talk quickly about Contact in the Desert. Not necessarily in, you know, the show, I think, promotes itself. You go to the website, you see the people that are going to be there. It's the who's who, and these are things you do often, but it feels to me that this is special, not just because of the profile, but also, literally the geography of where it's at and what that brings to the table. But talk a little bit about this also in the context of being a marker for where this, lack of a better word, movement is, let's say where it was 10 years ago to where it is today.
Well, first of all, this is the historic site of the Giant Rock Gatherings, which at their peak had 11,000 people showing up. I mean, even in the earlier years, it was like going from 2,000 to 5,000. So that was essentially the only place where you could go for a UFO conference back in the 1950s, because this material was much more secretive and, laughed at by people. It was not anywhere near as mainstream as it is now. So the thing that's cool about this particular UFO conference is not only do they have, like you said, a who's who of the people that are movers and shakers, but I've been to other UFO events where they have it in Las Vegas and you got to go through this casino. Literally, you're like dodging big hanging clouds of cigarette smoke and seeing thousands and thousands of slot machines and ling, 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 ling. You just hear this sound all the time as you're walking through it. And I couldn't do those events anymore. I can't do the whole Vegas casino event anymore. And I also don't really like doing events in hotels. I mean, it's kind of a necessary evil, but when you're in a hotel, you're dealing with all kinds of distractions and people who are not on the same level, and it messes up the vibes. Mm. Whereas in a situation like this, you have something that was originally called the Institute of Mental Physics, and it's actually right there in Joshua Tree, and it was a whole entire campus built during the time that these giant rock gatherings were happening to gather the interest of that whole phenomenon that was going on. So the buildings are still there, they've been maintained, and it's under management now that is continuing the tradition of having these awesome UFO conferences. So when you're there, everybody who's there is having the same shared experience. It's out in the desert, there's all kinds of cool buildings, there's all kinds of feng shui and neat little waterfalls and things you'll find as you walk around. It's a total freak show. It's amazing.
Again, you've been going to these, you've been speaking at these for a long time, and like you said, different sort of iterations, whether it be the, you know, at the airport Marriott or this type, yep, of, you know, this type of gathering. And you know, I was at something recently, Disclosure Canada, put on by the guys that do Modern Knowledge Tour up here, David Whitehead and Chris Rusak, and you know, good turnout. Guys like Dolan and Bassett were up here as well. And one of the things I try to monitor at these types of events, because I've been going to them, you know, long enough as well, is, you know, what do the people look like? And that sounds a little superficial, but what I mean is, are we seeing an evolution of the people coming out to these from, you know, let's say just the hardcore, you know, you're preaching to the choir type people, or are you starting to see a few more, you know, not Wall Street type guys walking in suits necessarily, but you know what I mean? Less people who wouldn't necessarily be considered quote unquote on the fringe, people who are living, you know, the sort of white picket fence lifestyle. And I've seen a little bit of it, but not necessarily as much as I would hope, but you've definitely seen a shift. What about you? What do you see in terms of the evolution of the audiences coming out to the events?
Well, as you know, I've been doing this for 20 years, and I've had a really good spectrum of experience of doing events. I would say the biggest demographic shift that I've noticed is 10 years ago, 12 years ago, almost the vast majority of your audience is all like baby boomers, and it is skewing dramatically younger.
Really?
In more recent years, yeah. There's a lot more people in their 30s, 20s, in some cases even teens, brought along by their parents, who are now showing up. You know, I don't see a bunch of crazy people when I do these things. I'm not looking out there at the audience and seeing guys wearing little square and round mirrors all over their clothes and a funny top hat with, like, rainbow colors, you know. Mm-hmm. I see normal-looking people. When you're at one of these conferences, it's not like you say, oh, wow, okay, I'm in Freak City here. It's just the average person is no longer average. That whole term, the average person, doesn't even mean anything anymore, because we have universal availability of information now with the Internet, and with that comes a complete failure of centralized corporate media control. They can't skew the narrative anymore. They can't make people afraid of this anymore, and they can't keep us ignorant anymore. And the cool part is it's totally democratic. It's totally participatory. If you want to veto the awakening and you don't want to participate in the awakening, you don't have to read about it. You don't have to do anything. But if you want to learn, it's incredible how much information is available. That old hackneyed saying of, oh, there is no evidence about UFOs, that's just absolute propaganda mind control. It's psychic driving. There is a huge amount of evidence, and that gets back to your former Canadian Minister of Defense, Paul Hellyer, mm-hmm, who's out there saying, just do 5 minutes of research, and you'll find tons and tons of stuff. There's no lack of evidence. There's all kinds of whistleblowers who've come forward And we use whistleblower testimony to create death penalty convictions in a court of law. So why do we not take them seriously when they say, this is what I was doing, this is what I worked on?
Well, it's interesting because, and again, part of the synchronicity key, which was, I think, again, seminal, but also wildly fascinating, was sort of, going back and, the symbolic carbon dating, let's say, of our evolution as a species. And what you found, one of the big, revelations was that this, sort of period of incremental evolution over long periods of time, and then bam, quantum leaps. And it's interesting because that would answer a lot of things, but it would seem to me that that applied to the time we're in right now, that this, the internet being introduced has to be a precursor to that, it seems, because again, the acceleration is just, it's exponential. And I know that you get asked a lot, and kind of people look to you for answers often, probably, beyond what would maybe be realistic, because at the end of the day, you can only speak to what you know. But it's interesting that people are always asking, David, what's going on? When's it happening? What do we expect, etc.? And I know you do your best to handle that. But I'm guessing the reason is because at some place that they can't even necessarily access, we must feel it in us, David, at the DNA level or something, and not be able to necessarily express it. But isn't that really what's happening? Is that it's like holding a beach ball underwater. It's just about to blow. That could mean tomorrow. It could mean 5 years. But doesn't this feel like a massive quantum leap in evolution we're living in right now?
Absolutely. I had expected, based on the cycle research I did in the first book, Source Field Investigations, that we were going to see some sort of quantum shift around the end of the year 2012, i.e. the Mayan calendar end date, December 21st, 2012. However, as the months grew closer and closer to December 2012, I was increasingly discouraged because I had it explained to me through many, many years of dreams and psychic work, as well as all my research into this phenomenon, that I expected a certain set of criteria, expected certain things to be happening in society. I expected the global bad guys to be very dramatically exposed, and that there was going to be some sort of really significant upheavals in our geopolitical order. I was expecting that you were going to see disclosure, UFO phenomena, UFO reality becoming much more mainstream, much more widespread, even possibly including some sort of formal acknowledgement or announcement at some point. And so as we got closer to the end of 2012 and this stuff wasn't happening, I said, well, the formula is